Okay. Hey, listen. Now, listen. Here's the rules. Last time I was here, there were some big girls' blouses crying. Okay? Now, none of that, you lot. Okay? There'll be no tears tonight. I just whispered to Tim. I said, about the last 10 times I came to this church, I ended up crying during worship just because I was sad about leaving church. And I've got to tell you, Melbourne's fine. We're doing all right. We're doing very, very well. So listen, to the person next to you, tell them they are looking amazing, incredibly good looking. They've lost weight. If you are inclined to, give them a kiss. And that'll be awesome. Fantastic. Now listen, when visiting preachers come, how funny is that? For me anyway, when visiting preachers come, they always bring product. They always bring resource. YouTubers call it merch. When they bring resource, and they'll talk about their resource, and they'll talk about how this resource will change your life, inspire you spiritually, how it will build your inner man, how you will get fresh revelation from the Word of God, how you cannot go home without this resource. Let me tell you, I brought resource tonight, and it will do none of that, okay? My resource, though, you will enjoy, and you will you'll have a good laugh. And you might even recognize a few people in there because it's actually a novel that I wrote. And so we've got some out there, not a heap. So make sure you go out there and get it. I promised my son, Matthew. Where are you, Maddie? Up there, I brought Maddie with me for a bit of daddy time for the long weekend. We're taking a long weekend. We're just wagging school tomorrow. And I told Maddie, if he helps me carry the bags, he gets 10% of all the takings for the book. Which, you know, when you're 13, that's significant. And so the question that I want to ask you is, you know, why haven't you got a copy of the book? And the second thing is, don't you like my son? You lot? Okay. So make sure you grab a copy. I promise you, you will actually thoroughly enjoy yourself. Thank you very much. So tonight, the title of my message, thank you for that beautiful worship. I'm just getting up here in an atmosphere of worship. And the title of my message is Pressure. I'm talking about pressure. And I really want to bring this, I guess, because my life over the last little while, maybe over the last, you know, year or so, particularly over, you know, there was a period of life, I was going through a lot of pressure. I was going through that sort of pressure. You know, the pressure that puts people on the street, as David Bowie famously in Queens, famously sung, but not that type of pressure. It was the kind of pressure that you wake up at 2 a.m. and you lie there thinking, and thinking, and then it ticks over to 3 a.m. and you lie there and you're thinking and you're praying, and then it ticks over to 4 a.m. and you're going, now I'm just getting angry because I'm going to be tired when I wake. You know what I'm talking about? There's that kind of pressure that keeps you awake. And I've got to be honest with you, I've always kind of considered myself a little bit of a person of faith. Well, you know, maybe not a little bit. I've considered myself a man of faith, right? That's kind of the way I wanted to live my life, right? So when I hit this time of pressure, I started to feel pretty rotten about myself. I started to feel like I'm not living up to who I thought I was in God. I'm not doing my part of the journey. I'd grab the scriptures and I'd claim them myself. And this is happening. This is what's going to happen. I'd declare it. And yet I'd still find myself that night lying in bed going, I need to get some sleep, but boy, I've got some pressure going on in my life. You know, my mum used to say, when you squeeze the toothpaste, you find out what's inside. Whose mum ever said that? Nobody's. Which is probably quite a smart, because honestly, what else would you expect, mum? Like, if you squeeze a toothpaste tube, if spiders are coming out when I squeeze the toothpaste tube, I'm freaking out because I brushed my teeth this morning, right? And now I've got to go and look in the mirror and check if I've got spider legs between my teeth. And that's a bad thing, I know. When you come under pressure, you figure out what's inside you. And I definitely have gone through over my life, there's been various events and various seasons where I've felt the squeeze, and sometimes something's come, like I felt like I didn't maybe live in victory as I should have, right? You ever been there? As you read the Bible, you realize that there are all these people in there that are just like you and me. There are all these people in the Bible, you know, the whole way through. I mean, look at some of them. They had everything going. They had all the ingredients for a great life. And yet when the pressure came on, they did dumb things. Moses, you know, grew up in absolute luxury. But when the pressure came on, he got sprung and he turned into a killer, right? What about David? Pressure came on. He stayed at home. He's hanging out on the roof. Why would you do that, David? I think we know why you would do that, David. Finds himself having a little bit of a look-see. Pressure came on. Terrible things came out of it down to the next generation. Sarah was taken before Pharaoh. She lies. Elijah won the victory, won an incredible world-changing victory, then got depressed. Somebody said, oh, you know, Queen, the Queen's after you. She's going to kill you. He gets depressed. He goes, throws himself under a tree and stays there, putting dust on himself. Gets all depressed. What about Daniel? Heard this incredible prophecy, Chris, in Daniel chapter 11, didn't he, mate? In Daniel chapter 11, heard this incredible prophecy. It was a great moment. But what it was, the prophecy was so big about his future and the future of his nation that he actually went and got all depressed as well. God had to send an angel to straighten him out. Noah saved the whole world, right? Saved his whole family. Then got drunk and naked. Paul was highly educated, but his zeal turned to anger, to pride, and to violence. Peter. I mean, who's like Peter? Pete, you're like Peter. You know, we're up, we're down, we're up, we're down. You look at the life of Peter. I mean, Peter's first introduction is his mother-in-law gets radically healed. He knows something's up, man. He's up. This is good. This is great. Next time we see Peter, he's taking a step on the water, right? We go, this is great. Good on you, Pete. You've done one thing that I've never done, walk on water. Of course, then he takes his eyes off Jesus, starts looking at the circumstance. Pressure comes on, bloop, 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 down he goes. We sometimes look at Peter and go, you goose, you still walked on water. That was pretty cool. And Jesus says, you little faith. Was Jesus scolding him? No, I think he was lifting him. I say, yeah, there's more for you. You thought you had it all made because you've seen a couple of miracles and you've done a few things and avant-garde was amazing last year and you think you're there, you think you're home. Wait till 6 weeks from now. Ye of little faith, because you're going up to great faith. Jesus says, who do people say I am? Peter has this amazing revelation, right? Amazing revelation. The revelation is this. Hey, Peter, you're the Son of God. You're the Son of the living God. And Jesus says to him, wow, Peter, those words didn't come from man. They came from heaven. He's on the mountaintop. Guess what? 45 seconds later, it's the same sentence. Jesus is saying, oh, get behind me, Satan. You big goose. Those words don't come from man. They come from the pit of hell. It's the same. Like he's literally in a 30-second conversation. He's up and he's down in the space of a minute. Right, you ever been on a great youth camp? You go, man, I am going to read my Bible. I'm living in this place. And then like 30 minutes later, you go, oh, why am I such an idiot? You know, we're up and we're down and we're up and we're down because pressure comes on. Hey, come with me to Daniel chapter 3. You know, in life, you can bow or absorb pressure. Every person is going to face pressure in life. You are all going to face. There are going to be times in all of our lives. You might face financial pressure, relational pressure. There's going to be times in your life where you just feel confronted by negativity about your faith. You're going to feel your faith challenged. You know, we have a generation that's growing up in the light, the pale dim light of their iPad and Netflix. And they're being told by this generation of Hollywood creators, of which occasionally we dip our toe into before we flee from LA. We're being told by this generation who doesn't like God. They're being told what God is like. You know, to me, that seems like fake news. To me, that seems incredibly biased. If the people that are speaking into the generation, to your friends, why your friends go, oh, yeah, man, God's angry with me. God would hate me. God doesn't like me. Where do people get this idea from? Certainly not from the Bible. Romans 2 says in the Bible that it is the kindness of God that draws people to him. It's the kindness of God that draws people to him, not the anger or the wrath of God. When I fail, when under pressure I fail or I stumble, my faith isn't strong, I would not run to an angry God or a judgmental God. But it's the kindness of God. But we have this generation that are being raised by other people that are saying, God's angry at you. God's against you. God hates you. God's not for you. God doesn't like people like you. Who's got a grandma or a great-grandma here who doesn't have a phone, doesn't have one of these newfangled phones? Right, I mean a mobile phone. Maybe you got a grandma who doesn't have a computer. Anyone, you know, and just, could you imagine if your grandma tomorrow knocks on the door, comes and says, oh, lovey, you're going to be so pleased with me. Oh, lovey, oh, I've got a new job. I am the product development and new technology manager of Apple. Wait, hang on. You hate computers. Oh, I hate those things. They're from the devil. You wouldn't know the upside from the downside of an iPhone. That's true, dear. But you're going to be in charge of telling the world about new developments and what iPhones are like and what Apple computers are like. That's right, dear. It wouldn't happen, right? It wouldn't happen, would it, Andy? It just wouldn't happen. And yet that's the situation we have, this generation being raised by people who don't like God, telling them about what God is like. We need to find our voice. We need avant-garde to be bigger, bolder, more stronger. We need a generation of young adult leaders to go out into this world and say, this is what God is like. He is kind. He is good. He is loving. He is full of life. Because they're not getting it from anywhere else. Come to Daniel chapter 3. I'd read it out of my Bible, but something happened. My Bible started getting blurry recently. And ink, I think, is going. So let's throw those scriptures on the screen, because otherwise I'm going from memory. Oh, there we go. So, of course, we find the story. There's a Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Super famous story, right? Everyone knows this one. And these three young men have been taken 600 miles from their land. They've been put into Babylon. They've been forced to submit on everything, what they eat. They've been told what they can eat. They've been told what they can do. They've been told where they live. They've been living in captivity. And these three young guys find themselves in a place where the last bastion, the last shred of their identity is now being challenged. And they're being told that when we raise up this enormous statue, you will bow down and worship. We find this situation where these guys go, you can play your music and you can tell us what's cool and you can tell us what we want to do, but this matters to me. Are there any people here who are like that? Say, this stuff matters to me. You can tell me I'm not cool. You can tell me I don't fit in. You can tell me that I'm not going to be part of that group or this group, but this stuff matters to me. And we find these three young guys, and of course they put themselves offside with the entire community because there is thousands of these people who bow down and three people standing out like a pimple on your face. And this is the report that comes. But there are some Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who pay no attention to you, your majesty. Next one. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold you have set up. Furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar. I love that name. Say Nebuchadnezzar. That's good, right? Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So these men were brought before the king. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to him. He said, tell me the truth. We skipped ahead a couple of days. He says, tell me the truth. Are you going to bow down? And this is what they say. King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver. Where are we up to? Have we flipped forward? I'm reading on the back screen. I've caught myself out with technology. I should have brought my glasses. You know when you've got glasses? That's what happens when you hit 32. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. And so the story goes on. It says that King Nebuchadnezzar, he orders that the fire be turned up 7 times hotter. Now, I'm not quite sure how you measure it, but they pretty much said, yes, King, whatever you say, 7 times hotter. It was so hot that when they dragged them off, and we all know the story, that even the soldiers that threw them into the fire were burned, like turned to ash, just to ash. And then, of course, King Nebuchadnezzar, after a second, he goes, wait, what? Stop. Wait. Didn't we just throw some dudes in the fire? And like, yeah, we just threw some. How many people are in there? Well, there's 4, and one of them looks like the Son of God. The thing about pressure is, pressure's going to come on every person. I don't mean to be negative tonight, but you're all going to face pressure. Some of you are already going through it, and I know what that feels like. All of us are going to face relational pressure. All of us, there are going to be time in your life where you will face family pressure. There will be a time in your life where you will face maybe health issues in your life. There will be a time in your life where the bills don't add up with the amount of money in your bank. You're all going to face pressure. We can absorb it, but we can't avoid it. I love the story of these 3 young guys. They'd already absorbed so much, and here they're being asked, give up that thing in your life that matters to you. Give up your faith in God. Bow down and worship a false idol. And God came through for them. I want to tell you tonight, I want to encourage you, young people, when you absorb pressure, when you say, I will not bow. I will not be crippled by this. I will not break under this pressure. I will not do that which I do not want to do, even though I feel the pressure, even though I feel the temptation, even though I feel the of addiction again, even though I feel those things in here and in here. When you don't bow, when you find a way, when you pray and say, God, help me through this, I tell you what, he's going to get in the fire with you. He's not on the outside looking in and going, keep going, let's keep going. He gets in the fire with you. He stands in with you. Was that angel or the person who looks like the Son of God? We don't exactly know who it was, but I don't reckon he was in there going, let's see how you go. He would have been in there revving them up. Look at this, boys. Look at this. You're incredible. You're not on fire at all. Not a hair on your head's burning. He would have been revving them up. And that's what God does. The worst thing you could do is turn tail. Get out of here and say, well, God will be angry with me, so therefore, because I just mucked up, I just did this stupid thing, I got squeezed, you know, spiders came out, and wow, I wasn't expecting that, and I'm out of here. Worst thing you can do is run from the presence of God. The worst thing you can do is run from a loving community, a community of people who went. How many times have you spoken, Shane? How many times have you guys spoken to people who come back to church and say, oh, in my head, I was going to be judged. And I walked back in here and I got hugged, not judged. No one's been talking about me. People just seem to be ready to pick up where we left off when I took off. Time and time again, the enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy. And one of the best ways he does that is he tells you that you're going to be judged and hated and reviled and talked about. Nobody's talking about you. Nobody's talking about you. There's a couple of people going, oh, bummer. I thought I was starting to make a name for myself. But they're not. We're not. Tim doesn't. Maddie Z, you guys haven't texted me for ages. Telling me, you know, who's not been to church, who's mucking up with their girlfriend. You guys, can you start texting me all the updates again? All those church-wide, you don't do that? Man, things have changed since I was here. Look at the life of Jesus. Could we have a better example of somebody who knew how to absorb pressure and turn it into something phenomenal? I love on the cross, we see Jesus exhibiting saving grace at that last moment of his life. There's one guy on the cross calling out, spitting, abusing Jesus, and there's another guy on the other side who says, Jesus, we deserve this. There's 3 people on the cross. You remember this. We deserve this. you don't, will you remember me? And Jesus says, this day in paradise. Even on the cross, he was about his mission. Even on the cross, going through absolute agony, he refused to let the blood dripping in his eyes muddy up his view of what he was about. Even when he was going through it, he kept on mission. The temptation is to take the hallelujah chorus and turn it all into something about me. To take church and turn it into something all about me. To take our faith and make it all about me. It becomes, you know, when you're on Instagram sometimes and you go, hey, what's Chris Alvaro been up to? And all you see is pictures of Chris's face, you know. Here's Chris at Cirque du Soleil. Here's Chris at Avant Garde. Here's Chris out on a date. Here's, you know what I'm talking about? It's like, man, I wanted to see a picture of Cirque du Soleil. I don't want to see, you're a good looking man though. I mean, everyone says it. What I'm talking about is that we can make so much of life about me, 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 me. It can be all about, we can be in church, me, me, me. I'm thinking about me. I'm thinking about my needs. I'm thinking about who's there when you're single. You're thinking about, is she watching me worship? Could I have a, you know, what's my good side when I'm worshiping? I don't have a good side, you know. You know, we can turn this whole thing into me. Selfie, 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 selfie. Jesus never lost sight, even on the cross. Even when we would forgive him if he was like, man, this hurts. Wow, this is painful. Even on the cross, he was looking across at someone else. When you face pressure, keep looking at other people. Keep looking to outsiders. Maintain your outward focus. When you're under pressure financially, you said it. Give. Give. Never stop. Look for opportunities. We've been broke at times. Oh, mamma mia. We're so broke. It's embarrassingly broke. You know, you're rattling around, putting together 20-cent pieces so you can, you know, the guy standing at your door looking for 10 bucks, you know, for mowing the lawn or whatever. It's just embarrassingly broke. But you never stop giving. And God comes through for you. God comes through for you. God comes through for you. Keep your outward focus. Jesus knew how to, he had to keep looking forward. Jesus had a very clear vision. You know, when he'd tell Peter, says, hey, Pete, I'm going to have to die. Pete's like, no way, man, that ain't happening. I'll die with you. Of course, you know, 12 hours later, he's like, oh, I don't know him. Peter, come on, Peter. I'm going to hang out with you in heaven. You'll be fine. Jesus very clearly knew what he was about. I have to go through this. I have to go through this pressure. He kept looking forward. You know, if I was to get Matt to stand up and I was to get Shane to stand up. And you're a marathon runner. You're remarkable. Incredible. You're a daddy. So good. Shane, a picture, like just a fine specimen of a man. But he's a marathon runner. Right. So if I was to say, okay, I'm going to give you guys a race. Run down and get us an Indian kebab from that place in Southo. You all know that place, right? It's good, right? $5 Indian kebab. But I said, Shane, you go forwards. Matty, you run backwards. Guess who's bringing me? Guess who's getting the blessing, right, of bringing me an Indian kebab? You tell him, hungry. It'll be Shane. Shane will win because the human body is designed to move forwards. The way that our tendons work, the way that our feet point, even the way that our ears point this direction so that we can hear, but we don't hear so well what's behind us. The human body is perfectly designed for us to move forwards. When we try and move backwards, I mean, I'm actually getting a bit nervous because I could give you the third or fourth worst moment, apart from that one right at the start where you're incredibly disappointing. When we move backwards, we run into stuff. When we're constantly looking over our shoulder, we're not moving at peak performance. When we move forward, when we face forward, You go, yeah, but you understand the divorce that I went through. No, I don't. But I don't know your incredible future. Well, you don't understand the pain that I went through over the last year. No, I really don't. But I had my own pressures. And I can say this side of it, when you keep looking forward, God comes through, climbs into the fire with you. He goes, come on, keep going, Dave, don't give up. Keep going, Junior, keep going, Maddie, keep going, Z. Don't give up. Keep going, Lola. Don't give up. We've got a God who doesn't quit. Neither should we. And Jesus understood that the battle was spiritual. He looked outward, he looked forward, and he knew that his battle was spiritual. Ephesians 6 says, finally be strong in the Lord and his mighty power. Put on the whole armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes, who's out to get you, to maim you, to disappoint you, to tell you you're not good enough, to tell you you should never go back to this place again, to tell you that you're not good enough to register for avant-garde, let alone turn up to church next Sunday. You have an enemy. He's very active in your life. He is trying to do his darndest to depress you, bring you down, and you need to take a stand and say, nope, I will not listen to that. Get junk mail, right? You know what happens when you get junk mail? Take it, bin it. You can't stop that junk mail coming into your letterbox, right? But you only open the ones that are addressed to you, right? Unless you really want that pizza. We do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against rulers and authorities, the powers of the dark world, and against spiritual forces of evil in heavenly realms. Therefore, put on the whole... I could preach on this. Therefore, put on the whole armor of God, and when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground. And after you have done everything, what? Stand. After you've done everything, don't crack. After you've done everything, don't shout. After you've done everything you can... stand. See, this matters to me. My faith matters to me. My God matters to me. When there's no evidence of God at work, you don't even know that you're in the middle of a miracle. You know, when Peter was busted out of jail, that sounds good, a couple of guys. Ooh, hang on, this sounds good. Peter, like he'd stopped being such a goose up and down, and he was in jail. He was actually asleep. An angel comes, gives him a whack on the side, says, get up, mate. Up he gets, chains fall off, soldiers are still asleep, doors fling open. Out he walks, and it says he thought he was having a vision. He's like smiling to himself, going, oh, this is a great dream. Oh, you know, I'm having this dream that maybe God's going to work a miracle in my life. It's going to be so nice. You know, I'm just dreaming about one day. And then it says the angel disappeared. He's like, whoa. I didn't even realize in the middle of a miracle. I didn't even know. I was in the middle of it. But God was working it. I've got to tell you this story. I've told it so many times, but I've got to finish with this. You guys are there. My first ever Easter camp, and I had miscalculated badly, like stuffed it. I wasn't even sworn in as a youth life director yet. That was happening like at about 7:30 one night. And I had stuffed it to the tune of $25,000. I thought there were 700 people coming on camp. There was only like 450 people coming on camp. And I was going to get sworn in as youth life director and immediately sacked. Pressure. I mean, I was crying. I thought I had just blown the biggest ministry opportunity of my life. And my wife and I went to the bank manager and we said, can we borrow $25,000 on our home loan? And the bank manager actually said these words to us. He said, are you buying a car? He said, nope, we're buying a camp. And we were on youth pastor's wage. We were on Perth youth pastor's wage. I was just looking for Tim. I was just going to give him a glare. And, it was a big move. It was bad. And we got to camp, and I remember walking out. Anne was, like, 11 months pregnant. She was just huge. And she was there, and she's doing the all the registrations. I kind of walked out. I distinctly remember this moment. I walked out, and I said to her, "We had any extras? We had any extras?" She goes, "Oh, couple." Because no one turns up to camp. Like, you don't turn up to camp unannounced, right? I didn't realize we're in the middle of a miracle. I mean, I was a disaster. I just gave her the look, and she gave me a look, and we're in this together, right, honey? You know, like. And then I remember in Belmont, and this bus pulled in. I'm like, "Who's that?" Because we already had 450 kids there. This bus pulls in, and down the steps of this bus comes this big tall guy called Seth. And Seth calls out, "Dave, can we bring some kids to camp?" I'm like, "Ooh, yes." I said, "How many you got?" Calling across the car park, "120. "Yes." And another bus pulled in, and this guy called Mike Maddish got off. And Mike Maddish goes, "Dave, so sorry, man. We were so disorganized. Can we bring kids to camp?" "Yes." "How many kids you got?" "60. So good. You know what? Over the next 15 minutes, never happened before, never happened since. We had 250 kids turn up to camp unannounced. I had to phone my mate Mick and say, "Mick, we need 250 breakfast from McDonald's. Like, we are not fully ready for this." You know what? I slept so well that night. I really did, because I thought I'd see my miracle. And then God just goes, "Come on, man. You think I'm stopping there?" And that the next night, like, miracles happened. We saw this guy called Paul Vassar. He had a busted up leg. He was booked in for a hospital. He did backflip because he got his knee healed. We saw this other guy called Johnny. He had 15 warts on his hand. 15 warts fell off on his hand during the worship. That's disgusting. And then to finish it off, they swore me in. Nobody knew. State president, your boss, didn't know. To top it off, we paid all the bills, and then we said, "We're going to take a great offering tonight for Youth Alone." These bunch of kids, $25,000 came in. And it was just like at the end of it all, after the miracle, and then I'll add some miracles to that, and then I'll just give you a pat on the back and say, "Don't worry, you'll never have to do it here." The exact amount that we had gone to the bank and asked on Amway, said, "There you go." Sometimes you don't even know you're in the middle of a miracle. You're facing that pressure and you think, will it even end? But the cogs of heaven are turning. Daniel chapter 11, I mentioned earlier, the cogs of heaven are turning. There is stuff going on in the heavenlies that sometimes, because we're so busy with TV and Netflix, or we're busy with studies, or we're busy with church, even such, we just don't take that moment to go, "God, you're there? You're in the fire with me? Oh, you're here. You feel it right now? Can you close your eyes?"